three breakout sessions with interesting topics, starting with IAS 37, then going to pollutant trading, and then we have some discussion on the disclosure initiative, some specific issues there. And before we go into the breakout session, we have the intro session, and this will be done by Sean. And please.
Okay, good morning everybody. I'm Joan Brown. I'm a member of the staff here at the IASB, and I'm going to be leading the session this morning on IAS 37, the standard for provisions and contingent liabilities. And we've got two objectives for this session. One is for me to inform you about the research project that the IASB is just starting on IAS 37, and then the other one is just to do a bit of research by getting your input on a couple of matters that we're seeking to gather more evidence on. I'm going to use this 20 minutes to explain to you what the project is all about, and then we'll be gathering your input in case studies in breakout sessions. Before I start talking about the project, just a very quick reminder of the scope and requirements of IAS 37. IAS 37 applies to all liabilities of uncertain timing or amount that aren't within the scope of another standard. And if you look on page 3 of Agenda Paper 3A, you'll see that means that it's got quite a broad and varied scope. It's effectively the bucket standard for everything, for all liabilities, more or less, that aren't in the scope of another standard. And because of its bucket nature, it means that its scope varies as the scope of other standards varies. And there's one change that is happening, for example, around about now, because IAS 11, the construction contract standard, is being withdrawn and superseded by IFRS 15, the new revenue standard. And the old IAS 11 had requirements for measuring onerous construction contracts. There are no requirements for measuring onerous contracts in IFRS 15. So onerous construction contracts will now move into the scope of IAS 37. But that's just a quick thought about the range of transactions that are in the scope of IAS 37 before we get started. Now, what this project is all about is that all that we're doing in this project is gathering evidence to help the IASB decide whether to take on an active project to amend aspects of IAS 37, and if so, which aspects it should consider within the scope of the project and how it should amend IAS 37. Some of you might be thinking, why look at IAS 37? Because in general, people think IAS 37 isn't a bad standard, and it certainly was a great leap forward over what had been happening beforehand when it came into effect. And some of you may remember that the IASB has previously had a project to amend aspects of IAS 37, which it abandoned in 2010. But this project isn't really just a continuation of the last project. We're actually starting afresh to look at the issues, and of course we will take into account the evidence that we gathered on the last project, but there's no presumption that the IASB is going to reach the same conclusions this time as it did last time. And in fact, there are some things that could steer it to quite different conclusions. Partly, obviously, the feedback from the last project, but also the proposals that it's developing for the conceptual framework could steer the IASB to quite different conclusions for IAS 37. In paragraph 10 of Agenda Paper 3A, I've listed a few of the things that we're going to be looking at as part of this project. Draw your attention to paragraph 10A, where we're going to be looking at the requirements for identifying liabilities. Some of you may be aware that there's been fairly widespread dissatisfaction with and in one particular interpretation of IAS 37, IFRIC 21, the levies interpretation. And people generally have said, well, it's a valid interpretation of IAS 37, but it's not giving a sensible outcome in some circumstances, which suggests that there's something not right in IAS 37. And in fact, the problems in IAS 37 are symptomatic of a more general lack of guidance on how to identify when a liability arises. And the ISB has been looking at that as part of its conceptual framework project. It's come up with some proposals for new concepts on identifying present obligations. And if and when it finalises these proposals, it could use them, put them into IAS 37 to replace the existing guidance. One other area where I could draw your attention to, page 5, paragraph D, the measurement requirements in IAS 37. I think there's probably significant diversity in the way that companies are measuring some provisions. It won't always be evident from financial statements because you're not required to disclose exactly how you measure, what the components of the measurement are. But for example, IAS 37 mentions risks adjustment, but doesn't give much idea of when, why, or how you would include a risk adjustment in the measure of a provision. There was a submission to the Interpretations Committee in 2010, which highlighted as well this diversity in practice in the discount rates being used to measure provisions. And that's particularly important for the long-term provisions like decommissioning obligations and some of the environmental provisions. And the predominant practice is to use a risk-free rate, I understand. But there are companies that are using their own borrowing rate, which for very long-term liabilities results in a much smaller measure of the provision. There's no requirement to disclose discount rates, so it's not obvious. The lack of comparability. The other area in measurement that I think there's probably a reasonable amount of diversity is in which costs are included in the measure of obligations to provide produced goods or services. Whether this IAS 37 is quite silent as to whether you would include just the incremental costs or whether you'd also add some sort of allocation of more indirect costs. And there's evidence that companies are doing different things. So these are the sort of things we're going to be looking at. There's a couple of others that I'm going to explain in more detail when we get to the case studies. This project will probably trail behind the conceptual framework because the proposals that the new concepts being developed in the conceptual framework in quite a few areas will have quite significant implications for any review of IAS 37. So the ISB is likely to wait until it's close to finalising the conceptual framework before publishing any preliminary views on IAS 37. But in the meantime, it does give us a chance to gather evidence of practice issues to help form some preliminary views. And there's two in particular that we're wanting to discuss today to get your opinions. Before I go on to them, does anybody have any questions about the project in general?
I agree with all your comments, including all your diversity comments. I'd like to know if there's going to be consequential considerations to the interim reporting standard as well.
And in what respect?
IAS 34.
But what would have to change?
There are examples in there that start to lead you down different considerations compared to where you would look at it on an annual reporting basis.
Such as?
Take profit share, employee compensation. Is there an obligation at interim if the bonuses aren't declared and given to the individuals to the end of the year? Should you start booking part of your bonus allocation at interim?
There is no, because IAS 4 basically says you do at the interim whatever you would do at the final. Any changes to IAS 37 that would apply at the end of year would also apply at the interim stage, but that's the only bit that would be automatically changed as a result of looking into IAS 37. It wouldn't include any review of IAS 34. That would have to be as a separate project if someone.
But I think if you're trying to work out timing as to when to recognise a provision, mm-hmm. when your snapshot is at month end for capital reporting purposes to a regulator, or whether it's at interim for IAS 34 purposes for the market, or at year end, I think your principle should stand on its own 2 feet, regardless of the time you book it.
I think that's right, and if there's something in IAS 34 that isn't saying that, because I thought that's what IAS 34 was saying, you use the same principles at interim as at final. Mary?
I think what Frank is raising is a point that really comes back to the current conceptual framework exposure draft in terms of uncertain liabilities, and if we finalize what's in the ED,
yep.
and put it in the conceptual framework, then I think that's the thing that raises the question Frank is asking about IAS 34, and is that consistent or not consistent with the conceptual framework? So I think that the question you're asking, Frank, is it really exists whether or not we take up the 37 project?
Joan, can I give another one, which because 37 says this deals with ones that aren't covered by other standards.
Yeah.
I think the trick is, and you're going to probably say it's heresy, is how strictly do you apply those other standards? And I'll give the weird example. Because I'm in mining, and it's a wasting asset, I know, in inverted commas, that at the end of the life of mine, I'm going to retrench people. But IS19 doesn't permit me to create a retrenchment provision because I haven't initiated the action.
Yep.
But it's a foregone conclusion. So, like, when does the foregone conclusions override the strict interpretation of other standards in IS using IS 37?
That's an IAS 19 question, though, isn't it?
Well, no, it's not, because it's a closing. I've got obligations to close the mine.
Yep.
And part of that obligation will be to deal with all of the events and circumstances that exist at closure, and that closure date is uncertain. So the fact that I haven't given the person today a notice to retrench, does that mean that I've got this relatively large liability that only gets recognised 3 months before the mine gets closed, but it's been known from the day I opened the mine?
So your challenge is, why is that within the scope of IAS 19 and not within the scope of IAS 37? If it weren't in the scope of IAS 19,
I'd be providing for it, because I can estimate how many employees I'm going to have at that point in time, and I know what their average salaries are likely to be at that point in time, because I do life of mine budgets and planning. And I have to do life of mine budgets and planning in order to do my decommissioning and restoration liability. There's liabilities that don't exist yet.
Noted.
Thank you. I have a question regarding the previous project trying to revise IAS 37. As long as I remember, you published an expert for the draft in 2010 and proposed the removal of the probability criterion for recognition and required the measurement using the expected value. Why it was suspended? Probably you have received a negative response. And is there any changes in the environment for requiring this project as a research project? How the situation changed?
So why are we re-raising matters that we tried discussed before and didn't pursue the proposals then? I think it's because there are a wider range of topics that of matters that have been identified as concerns with IAS 37. So, and even in the last proposals, there were some proposals that people thought should go ahead. And the project was halted because there were more projects at the time, and it seemed quite important to wait for the conceptual framework as well. So starting it again, yes, last time there was opposition to removing the probable outflows criterion, and that feedback is being taken into account. But we're just going through all the various matters that could be problems with IAS 37, which includes the ones that we might have put proposals on. But there's no presumption at all that things like the probability criterion or the measurement requirements, the proposals will be the same this time as last time. But it's worth having another look at them in the context of today's situation.
But what has changed is a discussion about levies, and that was, I think, not existence in 2010, and there was a lot of criticism about the outcome of this discussion. And you mentioned that, okay, people agreed with is in line with IAS 37, but the outcome is really people are not satisfied, and I think that is at least some new information or new discussion, which I think makes us at least okay, that we maybe think about this again, and together with the conceptual framework, I think we have sufficient evidence now, maybe we should do this research project.
I think we've also got more evidence of diversity in measurement than we had, and a lot of that came out of the last project. Okay, if I just move on now to talk about the two topics that we're going to be asking for your input on today. If we turn to page 7, the first one is the recognition criteria in IAS 37. And if you look at paragraph 14, you see that IAS 37 has three criteria for recognition. The first one is that on the basis of all available evidence, it is more likely than not that a liability exists. Now, for most liabilities, there's very little doubt that a liability exists or not. So if a company has given contractual warranty obligations on its products, it has a liability to fulfill these obligations, even if the outcome is very uncertain. The times when there might be uncertainty as to whether or not a liability exists is for things like litigation provisions, where a company is being sued for something but is defending itself, and there's a dispute as to whether it actually committed the act of wrongdoing for which it might have to pay compensation or whatever. So that first criterion is really there for the litigation type liabilities. The second one is if it's probable, which the standard says means more likely than not, that an outflow of resources will be required to settle the obligation. So is it probable that you'll have to pay out? And then the third one, if a reliable estimate can be made of the amount of the liability. And IAS 37 goes on to say that in all but extremely rare cases, it's going to be possible to get a range of possible outcomes and then get a reasonable estimate of the amount to make a provision for. Now, there's been a bit of debate in the past about these criteria, and the debate has focused on the second one, the probable outflows criterion. IAS 37 is a bit of an outlier in having this criterion, and in its last project, the ISB proposed to take it out of IAS 37, and the effect would be that all liabilities would be recognised. Whatever, if it was probable that they existed, they would be recognised, whatever the possible outcome. And I think that reflected the view of the IASB at the time that if an asset or a liability should be recognised if it exists, and otherwise, without some liabilities being recognised, the financial statements aren't giving a complete picture of the financial position. I think if we looked at this issue again, the ISB would have to think again in the light of the proposed changes that it's going to be making to the conceptual framework.
And sorry, what is the difference between A and B? I mean, if a liability exists, by definition, it's an obligation to pay someone else some money.
Yeah.
So B and A must be the same thing.
If we think about a warranty obligation, a liability does exist. The company has an obligation to pay out if the car breaks down or whatever. Now, it may be that the car is very unlikely to break down, in which case it would not be probable that there will be an outflow required to settle the obligation. But in many cases, if it's like a litigation, the two will be very closely correlated. Not always, as some people have pointed out to us, but generally they'll be very closely correlated. The conceptual framework is proposing a new approach to recognition, and that indicates that, so instead of having particular criteria that would be in every single standard, the approach being proposed in the conceptual framework exposure draft would be that the recognition requirements could vary between standards, and that recognition of some assets or liabilities in some circumstances wouldn't provide information that is sufficiently useful to justify the cost of providing it. So that would mean that different recognition criteria could be specified in different standards, so that the fact that IS 37 criteria are different from those in other standards isn't in itself a reason for changing them. And indeed, liabilities in the scope of IS 37 are often a bit different from other liabilities, and they're different in particular because there is no transaction price that they could be measured by reference to. They're rarely traded, so they're not. They wouldn't necessarily have a market price, a current market price, but perhaps even more unusually, they often haven't even arisen in an exchange transaction, so you don't have a historical price. And it could be that that's a characteristic of liabilities within the scope of 37 that could justify different criteria. And it's in the end then going to boil down to, does the probable outflow criterion serve a useful purpose or not? So if there's a liability that probably exists but probably won't result in an outflow of benefits, does recognising that liability provide useful enough information to justify the cost of providing it? And that's the question that we're going to be exploring in the case study today. Case study one has an example of a liability that definitely exists, but over the course of time, the probability of outflows changes. And the question is that you have to consider, at what point would recognition of that liability become useful? Up until year seven, it's less than 50% likely that it's going to result in an outflow of economic benefits. But between years four and seven, the probability is increasing. And the question is, if you recognise the liability between years four and seven for something that you think is probably not going to result in an outflow of benefits, is that going to provide useful information? Some would say no, because it's not predictive of what's going to happen. But others would say, well, during that period between years four and seven, the amount I recognise will gradually increase, because the probability of outflows is increasing, or it could gradually increase. And maybe that is useful, because maybe that is giving an early indication that there's something going wrong here that you wouldn't otherwise get. Anybody got any questions on the recognition criteria, Bob?
Just wanted to ask, you said, I'm looking at paragraph 14, and the possibility of getting rid of B more likely than not, and kind of the thought process that if a liability exists, it doesn't have to be more likely than not to recognize. That sounds like an argument, but I'm wondering if the board is considering, in holistically thinking, not just about liabilities, but then go over to the asset side and say, should we have symmetry on the asset side? And I would hope the conversation would be a little more holistic than just looking at the liability side and thinking through that logic. And so why are we so conservative on the asset side? And if it, I don't think there should be a matching. I think there maybe should be some more conservatism on the asset side. But if you just look at it at the liability side and say, hey, a liability exists, why are we having this arbitrary more likely than not? It seems like you should talk about the asset side of it, not just focus on the liability side. And why are we so conservative? Why are we so against booking gain contingencies? So I would hope that the discussion would be more holistic and just not pigeonholing into the liability argument. So more a comment than a question.
Okay.
Maria,
but John, I think we have now 5 minutes, and maybe put the discussion then in the report back, right?
Okay, it's a question relating to 14 and the application, but okay, if we can do it in the discussion, but basically I just want to make sure I understand exactly what it relates to.
I'll finish off this last bit and I'll just have a quick word with you after. The final thing is the other topic that we're going to be talking about is estimating future cash flows when there's a range of possible outcomes and which amount within that range. IAS 37 is unclear, especially for single obligations. It says you might estimate the most likely outcome, but if other outcomes are mostly higher or mostly lower, then the best estimate will be higher or lower, but it doesn't say how much higher or how much lower or why. And so at the moment, there's sort of pretty much free choice as to which amount within the range you would pick as your best estimate. If the ISB were to review IAS 37, it could include more precise requirements, as I've set out in paragraph 31. So it could require companies to estimate the most likely outcome, or the expected value, the probability weighted average of all the possible outcomes, or some other amount within the range. And it could say that you'd use the same measure for all liabilities in the scope of IAS 37, or it could specify different requirements for different types of distribution. And so what we'd like you to discuss with the aid of a little example in your discussion group is whether specifying more precise requirements would improve comparability, and if so, which requirements would provide the most useful information for investors at a cost that doesn't exceed the benefits. We're going to break up into the groups now. Each group has been assigned one or other of the case studies. And so please start with that case study. If you have extra time and would like to have a look at the other case studies, by all means do. There'll be a board member in each group to chair the discussion and a staff member to take notes and report back your conclusions.
Okay.